California. This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
That's true. I am Jim Rome. What's up? We go to hour number two. I'm live in Southern California. In fact, live from the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Derek Morgan, Tennessee Titans linebacker, is going to join me momentarily. So you have all this backlash about the All-SEC Championship. The backlash, the fatigue, the hate. Let me tell you this. I'm in Southern California. I just did 1 hour of nationally syndicated radio and TV, and I got telephone calls only from people in the southern region of this country, and they were great. So you can't come in here and tell me, even as a Los Angeles native, that was a bad thing last night. It's great. Great for team content. It's great for everything. How is it not great when a guy like David in Tampa calls my radio program and says, "Hey, Rome, I watched that game. I'm a longtime Georgia fan. I didn't drink a single beer during that game. But by the end of the night, I was up till 4 o'clock in the morning because I polished off a six-pack and a bottle of wine and could not get out of bed."
I need psychiatric help right now.
This guy needs psychiatric help right now. So how are you going to tell me that's not a good thing? And no offense, David. And how are you going to tell me that it's also not a good thing that the very next call after that call is a guy in Florida, Kevin, who says, "Let me tell you something, David, that's not a bad night. That's your reality."
Hey, loser, that's not one bad night. That's your reality.
Well, actually, let me correct myself. He didn't say, "Hey, David." He said, "Hey, loser, that's not one bad night. That's your reality, chump."
Which doesn't put...
You're going to tell me that an all-SEC championship game is a bad thing? I'm not going to tell you that. Not when we get a game like that, and not when the reaction is like that, because there's nothing like SEC football. You don't get reaction like that for other conferences. 1-800-636-8686. So as I'm efforting Derek Morgan, and we'll talk about Tennessee and the Patriots, I do want to talk also about Bama and the fact that there's Bama fatigue, which I'll get to momentarily. But as promised, we're joined right now by a linebacker for the Tennessee Titans. He had four tackles and a sack in that win over Kansas City. For the regular season, 7.5 sacks, 2 passes defensed, 2 fumble recoveries. He was the ACC Defensive Player of the Year at Georgia Tech. He was the 16th pick overall in the 2010 draft. And you've got Tennessee at New England, Saturday, 8:15 p.m. Eastern. It is a CBS game. Derek Morgan is my guest. Derek, it's great to have you back on. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm good. How you doing?
Good, good. Derek, thanks for doing this. Now, the team did not flinch when you had to win to get in Week 17. So when you guys were in the locker room on the road down 21-3 against Kansas City, what was the mood like in that room, and what were the types of things that you guys were saying to one another?
The mood was pretty tranquil. It was calm, to say the least, and I think I don't think anybody counted us out at that point. It was a lot of guys talking about, you know, they got to play us for 60 minutes. And, you know, we took that attitude out to the second half, and, you know, we knew we had to be dominant defensively, and our offense came out with some big scores. And so we did a great job of playing complimentary football in that second half, and you know, we just need to turn that into a 60-minute game this Saturday.
Derek Morgan, my guest, you know, one of the things you said out of that game was, we know who we are, and that's all that matters. So lay it out for those listening. Who exactly are you, and how would you describe the attitude of this team?
We're just a really gritty bunch of guys. Don't get a lot of attention, which is fine. We fly under the radar. We just come to work, you know, blue-collar type of team, you know. Has squeezed out some ugly wins this year, but a win is a win. And, you know, we just play team football. You know, it's not all about just one guy. Everybody makes their plays when it's their turn. So I think it's a great team of blue-collar workers that we got here.
Now, Jack, I got to know, it's your first playoff game, and when you consider what you've gone through to get to this point, I mean, what did that feel like emotionally in that game? Did it feel like you were out there? Did it feel like it was any different because it was the playoffs and it was your first game, or did it feel like a regular game? Is that what you told yourself?
Yeah, I tried my best to approach it like a regular game to keep my emotions in check. But you kind of get a sense of the significance of the game. It's a lot more people in the stands, more cameras around. But I just got to thank God. It's been a blessing to be, going into my eighth year, being able to hit the playoffs. You know, some people go their whole careers and don't even touch the playoffs. So to go to the playoffs, you know, on my birthday and to actually get a win is a blessing from God. And, this team has just been, we've been fighting and scrapping all year. And we had that mentality going into the playoffs.
Derek Morgan joining us. All right, so as a defensive player, let me get your thoughts on the offense. For instance, what goes through your head when you see Derek Henry running with the kind of authority that he was running with? Did that get you fired up?
Yeah, definitely. When you have a back like him, who's a very dynamic back, with the size that he has, to see him hitting the holes like that is just is very satisfying to watch, when the offense is taking control of the clock. I think they came out and ate up about 8 minutes on that drive, mostly running the ball. So it's very encouraging to watch as a defensive player. And, that's what we always stress, that, we like to run the ball and to be dominant in that phase of the game. And to see him have that success was really encouraging.
Well, then what's it feel like when you see your quarterback out there laying it out there, catching touchdowns, running, laying
Just a competitor, a true competitor. Team first guy. You see when he threw that block that basically sealed the game for us. That's a selfless play. Some quarterbacks won't make that block because they're afraid of getting hurt or what have you. And to see that, it had me fired up. And so, he's a true competitor. Never gets too high, too low. Very focused on what he has to do. And he's coming through big for us right now.
Derek Morgan joining us again. So, Derek, when you have the kind of comeback that you had on the road against Kansas City, how much confidence does that give the team heading into Saturday's game against the Patriots?
I think it just kind of confirmed a lot of people's thoughts of what we already, kind of knew about ourselves. But it's always good to get that confidence and to get that road win, especially going into a hostile environment like New England. And knowing the pedigree of that team. And so it was a good confidence boost. And I think guys are really focused. The energy around here is very, very focused on the task at hand. Not getting too high on ourselves from that win, but knowing that we're two games from the Super Bowl. And we have a great chance to do something special this Saturday.
Well, given you've been asked this question 1 million times, let's go ahead and make it 1,000,001. What do you do to make Tom Brady uncomfortable?
Make him uncomfortable in that pocket.
Get how do you do it?
Pressure in his face.
Yep.
And no quarterback likes, their pocket being condensed and, having to move around. He's able to move around the pocket. He's still able to do that. But, just really having people in his face every time he throws the ball is what it's going to take to win the game. He is their team. And as he goes, the team goes. And so we have to do our best to affect him with our pressure and our rushes.
And Derek, before you go, I had Wesley Woodyard on the show last week, and he talked about the switch to a plant-based diet. And you and your wife, Charity, have been leading that way and played a huge role in his transition. When did you first make the move to a plant-based diet? And then what kind of effect did that have for you?
I was back in March in the off-season. I started transitioning, cutting out red meat, cutting out chicken, and eventually just going fully vegan. But I would say that it helped me in a few ways. One, from sleeping at night to my recovery and just having mental clarity. My wife she's a chef by trade, and she started to learn how to cook that way. Her Instagram, Chef Charity Morgan, if you want to check out some of her recipes.
Sure.
But she made it easy, man. So I just noticed those things, recovery, sleep, mental clarity, and it's been great for me.
Like, Derek, for instance, how many calories a day do you consume? And then, what do you have to eat to get there?
I would say the calorie intake is very similar to what I was on a traditional diet. But she's actually on her way bringing some lunch up here now. So I think today it might be some lentil meatloaf, some broccoli, and some a carb or something. But it varies. It's basically anything that you would eat regularly, whether it's a burger or, anything, she'll find a way to switch the ingredients to plant-based ingredients. And it really, a lot of the times, it doesn't taste too different than what you're expected, what you're usually eating. So she makes it easy. Got to eat a little bit more because you're burning through those calories. But you've got to be conscious of that, and that just takes time to learn how to eat differently.
All right, so now you got teammates who love this, and they love what she's doing, and she's totally involved right now. Do you and the rest of the guys try to keep each other honest when it comes to that vegan approach, or do you just kind of let everybody do their own thing?
Well, we it's funny. Back in training camp when guys were starting to get on the plan, we used to be real judgmental. You know, if somebody was eating a pack of cheeses or, you know, had a piece of chicken wing on their plate, you know, I would kind of walk by and give them the evil eye. But, you know, it's a lot of the guys are on the plan just because of how the food tastes. They're not necessarily following a vegan lifestyle. They just like the way my wife's food tastes. So I think that says a lot. But, you know, we started out, you know, giving guys a lot of crap for how they were eating, if they were getting off the meal plan. But now it's just guys are just, you know, in the swing of things and kind of do what they do.
Nobody's saying Jack anymore. Now they get it. They like the way it tastes. They see the benefit, and no one's going to mess with Charity because she knows what she's doing. She's a chef by trade. You got Tennessee at New England on Saturday. It is a CBS game. Derek Morgan, my guest. Derek, appreciate you very much. Thanks for doing that once again. Good luck this weekend.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
You got it, Derek. 8 years in and into the postseason. And they fall behind KC 21-3. Nobody panics. Nobody freaks out. He said it. At halftime, it was, quote, tranquil. I bet for two things, for two reasons. Number one, they know what they're about. He said it. We know who we are. We know who we are. Let me add to that. I agree with that. The Titans know who they are. We know who we are, and we know who they are. They're the Chiefs, and they've melted down before, and they did once again. And I'm guessing every last guy in that Titan locker room knew it. We know who we are, and we know who they are, and we're leaving here with a W. And we're headed to New England. And that's exactly what happened. Dear Jim, great interview. Titans are going to keep showing up and continue to shock Vegas and the world. Thank you for the karma. Tighten up. War College football kicking off in 233 days. Cheers. Robert in Nashville. I'll tell you something right now. There's nobody outside of Nashville that's giving them a chance. I mean, literally nobody is giving them any chance to beat New England. New England because of their pedigree. New England because ESPN just gave them high premium fuel, rocket fuel, for them to rally around. And, of course, you're going to look at the two teams and say, let's look at the matchups, look at the talent. Tennessee's not going to Foxborough to win. Nobody's giving them any chance. Yeah, I wouldn't be so quick to say that. I wouldn't be that quick to say that. They've got some grit. They've got some toughness. Now, again, going to KC and beating the choking Chiefs is one thing. Going to Foxborough is another. I'm just saying, go ahead and play that game. What do you say we go ahead and play that game on Saturday night and watch it on CBS? Then we'll see. When we come back, I'm going to change up. We're talking to Aaron Jackson. That's coming up next. After that, a reset of last night's championship game. Go anywhere you want with it. SEC honk. Come on in. You know that all SEC hate that you hear? Not here. I'm all about it. I love that matchup last night. I love the reaction to that matchup last night. Hit me up. Also, still ahead, it is Podcast Tuesday. I've got a preview of my conversation with Tom Tolbert. I did it yesterday. It's awesome. In fact, it might be one of your favorites. It's Ep 19 of the Jim Rome Original Podcast. I've got a preview of that coming up later on. But first things first, Aaron Jackson, when we come back.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Spilling my first cup of coffee on the new set. That was close. What's up? Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. Didn't happen, though. At least the desk is white, though. You'll know it when I do it. Love this next story. We are joined by a member of the U.S. Olympic long track speed skating team, the first African-American woman to make the U.S. Olympic long track speed skating team. She finished third in Friday's Olympic trials. Has been speed skating for roughly 4 months, a medalist at the World Championships and Pan American Games as an inline skater, United States Olympic Committee Female Athlete of the Year for roller sports in 2012, 2013, and 2015, also a competitor for the Ocala Cannibals, among other roller derby teams. My guest is Aaron Jackson. Aaron, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing?
Aaron, I'm awesome. Really nice to talk to you. Let me first start by asking you, when you were interviewed on the ice after it was over and you made the Olympic team, you said you had no idea how that happened. Now that you've had a few days to think about this, has it sunk in yet that you are a member of the U.S. Olympic team? And if so, how does that feel now?
Yeah, I think it's finally sunk in. It's still just so hard to believe and comprehend, but it feels pretty great. Like, at first, it was just something that, I wouldn't say it came out of nowhere, but it definitely caught me off guard a little. So it was like a mix of, like, overwhelming excitement and also a little bit of stress, of course, but the stress part is definitely dying down now, so it's a lot of excitement.
Aaron Jackson joining us. It didn't come out of nowhere, but as I mentioned, you've only been training on the ice for about 4 months. So how surprised are you to be in the position you're in right now and heading to the Olympics as a long track speed skater?
It's yeah, it's crazy. Like, this was always kind of like a long-term goal of mine. I was coming into the Olympic trials this year just hoping to get some experience and, like, kind of see where I am after this time I've had on the ice. And I was always planning to, like, stick around for the next cycle. So, yeah, it was definitely a goal of mine to be on Team USA. I just didn't see it happening this quickly.
As I mentioned, you were an experienced inline skater, and you've been doing that for about 15 years. So how did the idea of you trying long track speed skating first come to be?
Well, I guess since about 2005, there's been like a trickle of inline skaters over to the ice just because there are more opportunities and inline skating isn't an Olympic sport. So if you want to chase your Olympic dreams, you have to switch over to the ice. So I've always kind of had that in the back of my head. Like, at some point, that could be something that I wanted to do. But the main thing is that I'm also, like, pretty, like, big with academics and all that. So I really wanted to finish my degree, like, graduate college before I thought about doing anything with ice. So yeah. I graduated in 2015 and took a little time to myself and then figured, okay, I guess it's time.
You know what? I'm going to double back to the academics. I think that's a big part of this. But in terms of the ice, what was it like the first time you were on the ice?
Cool. Well, actually, I guess a quick timeline of my ice experience. So the first time I stepped on the ice was September of 2016, just kind of like doing a public session, just like putzing around on the ice while my friends were training, just trying to figure out like how to step and all that. So that kind of like reignited that feeling of wanting to try ice skating. So after that, I was like, well, let's go ahead and try this long track thing. So I went out to Salt Lake City at the Olympic Oval, like at the end of February through the end of March for like exactly a month. And that was the first time I trained in speed skating. So I did it a month at that time and then went back to speed skating or inline speed skating and roller derby through the summer and then moved out to Salt Lake full time in September, like at the end of September. So that's kind of my timeline. So like when people say like, oh, it's only been 4 months. I don't know. Sometimes it can be a little misleading because I do have like an extensive background in inline skating and other forms of skating. And, if you ask me like, oh, it's only been 4 months, but then say I started in March, then, you know, it's like, do you count the months in between March and September when I was inline skating? So yeah, just
fair
a
enough.
Clarification hey, for a lot of people who are wondering.
That makes sense to me. Aaron Jackson, my guest, that makes sense to me. So it's not really 4 months per se. But then again, at the same time, if we're talking timeline, when you say you stepped on the ice in 2016 for the first time, it wasn't like you stepped on the ice for the first time in 2016, right? It was the first time in a long time, but that was not the first time you had been on the ice in 2016.
Oh, no, that was the first time.
Wow, that's incredible. All right, so when you mentioned inline skating, you trained at the Skateaway South Rink, which could be described as nondescript from the outside, but on the inside, some of the very best skaters in the world have been there. What were those training sessions like?
Like back with all the top skaters back in the day?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that was always awesome because I was lucky enough to have those top skaters to look up to because at the time, like Joey Mantilla and Brittany Bow, like they were at the top of the inline game. So I just always felt like very lucky to have them to look up to and train with. And just like a ton of other top skaters have come out of Ocala, Florida with Coach Renee Hildebrand. So yeah, I've just always felt really fortunate to be able to like look up to these skaters and chase them day after day.
Aaron, you mentioned Renee Hildebrand. Who is Renee and what makes her so special?
Well, so she's our coach out of Ocala, Florida, and she's just raised a ton of world champions and Olympians. And it's just something about her where she's able to help skaters, like, or just people in general, like, reach new heights and, like, unlock things in themselves that they didn't even know they had. So she's just a great coach and also a really great motivator. So I feel like sports are very mental, and she just really helps people, like, realize within themselves that they have what it takes. And then from there, it's just easy sailing.
Erin Jackson joining us for a few more moments. Now, we mentioned that you've done some roller derby back in the day. It's a sport that a lot of people have seen, but very few have actually done. What's it like to compete in roller derby?
Well, it feels like a completely different sport compared to inline. But I guess, you know, it's all skating. But roller derby is definitely super fun. It's like my first real team sport that I've competed in. So that's like a new experience as well. I started out with the Ocala Cannibals in Ocala, Florida, and then switched to Jacksonville Roller Derby out of Jacksonville, Florida. And I'm also on the USA World Cup team, USA Roller Derby. So it's just awesome to have all these new experiences and meet all these awesome people, like, all while being on roller skates.
You know, you mentioned all these experiences. The fact is, you've competed internationally. You've represented the United States before. But have you thought about how it's going to feel to compete in the Olympics? Is there anything that you think that would compare to that?
No, nothing. It's awesome, and it's completely mind-blowing. You know, it's this amazing experience that I'm really excited for. I guess the closest I've come is I competed in the Pan American Games a couple years ago. So that's, I guess you can kind of compare it to like the Olympics for North, Central, and South America. So that was kind of my first like large-scale international experience, other than like the World Championships every year for inline skating.
Now, you've got a month between now and the start of the Olympics, and you've come so far just in the last 4 months. How much further can you go in the next month? I mean, how much more can you improve between now and then, or is it just a matter of maintaining and being as focused and prepared as you can be?
Right. I mean, I really have no idea, and I feel like that's pretty exciting in itself. What's good, or what I think is good, is that I still have so much to improve on. Like, I really like it when people tell me, like, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. Like, not exactly like that, but just, like, a lot of constructive criticism, because I always like to know that I have, like, more things to improve on. So that's really my goal. It's, like, I don't really have, like, a specific time or a specific placement that I'm putting as a goal, just more that I can keep improving, like, each time I get out there. So that's really what I'm looking forward to, is just taking more and more time off of my 500-meter race.
And you keep doing that. Erin, one last thing, because I mentioned I'd get back to your academics. You graduated cum laude with a bachelor's degree from the Materials Science and Engineering program from the University of Florida. At the same time, all the skating that you've been doing means you've been traveling all over the world. So how have you managed all of this and been able to juggle everything?
It was really hard. I didn't get much sleep when I was at the University of Florida. And but really, I feel like I need a lot of things going on in my life to really keep me on task. So, like when I was in college, I had like the two different skating sports going on while I was in school. And just like having a whole bunch of things in my schedule just kind of kept me like flowing from one thing to another. It was after I graduated when I felt like things weren't as manageable, just because I kind of failed a little bit on the time management. So keeping busy definitely worked for me, I think. Other than the lack of sleep part.
Right. Structure is good. First African-American woman to make the U.S. Olympic long track speed skating team, a member of the U.S. Olympic team, and we are about a month out. Erin, so nice to have you on the show. Good luck. Everybody will be watching, and really nice to have you on this show.
Cool. Thank you very much.
You too. Erin, thanks so much. Appreciate you. Erin Jackson, great story. So it's not really 4 months per se, but over the last 4 months, it's amazing. The one thing that she and I did not get into, or I didn't bring up, is the amount of time that she has shaved off her actual times. I mean, her best times. When we were talking about this, her best times were in the 40s. Then she hit a 39.51 in Salt Lake City, dropped a 39.22 in her first heat at the Olympic trials. Then the second heat went even faster at 39.04. And as she points out, I like it when people say, you're not doing this right, or you can do better, because that means she can go faster. So I wonder, if she made as much progress as she did in the last 4 months, how much more progress can she make between now and the start of the games? We're going to find out. That is a great, great story. My thanks to Erin Jackson. When we come back, we are open the rest of the way. More on last night's championship game. Podcast Tuesday, which I want to get into. Also, the halftime show last night I thought was mind-blowing. I thought that was literally the best halftime show I've ever seen. And I want to tell you why that is. All of that coming up in the next half of the program. Also, at the top of the show, in hour number one, we had some great calls. It goes to show you don't need to be Brad and Corona or Vic or Mike and Indy or any of the so-called legends to come in here, get racked, and make a name for yourself. Work your brand. Call the program. Maybe you have found the show on TV after losing it and you're ready to come back in. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Now it's time for a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Erin Jackson was good. She was really, really good. She was way more comfortable than most athletes I interview. Very, very smart. Very talented. Great story. And I love that she's an Olympian. But I got to admit, I also love the fact that she skated for the Ocala Cannibals because I love roller derby. Not to date myself, but as a kid growing up in Los Angeles, I used to wake up on Saturday mornings and watch the LA Thunderbirds on TV. It was so awesome. It's amazing how they never lost. Not only did they never lose, but they always seemed to win on their very last shift by one. I'm not saying it was fixed, but it was fixed, right? I assumed it was fixed. Had to be fixed. And if it was fixed, were the 58 people in the Olympic Auditorium who were spectators also in on the fix? Like, as an adult, as I look back on this right now, I can't figure it out. I just know it was awesome. Roller derby was awesome then, and it's awesome now. I don't know why we don't talk more about it on the program. I don't know why we don't interview more people in roller derby. This segment brought to you by The Commuter. Liam Neeson returns to the big screen in the action-packed thriller, The Commuter. It features an all-star cast, including Vera Farmiga, Patrick Wilson, Sam Neill, Jonathan Banks. The Commuter arrives in theaters on Friday. Let's go back to last night's game for a minute. If you're on hold, stay there. Phone call is coming up this segment. Do not go anywhere. See, that's a big mistake that a lot of you make. Not Josh in Detroit, as an example. He will always be on hold no matter what. I was going to say, a mistake that a lot of you make is you hang up because you think that I'm not coming to you, and then I'm going to come to you, and you're not there. Do not hang up. If you're on hold right now, there is a chance that you will get on the air this segment. That said, let me say this. Game, recognize game. SoCal, recognize SoCal. Now, typically it would take a wardrobe malfunction or a band playing without their instruments plugged in. No names mentioned. The Red Hot Chili Peppers in the Super Bowl. It would take one of those two things for me to swerve way out of my way to give any kind of run to a halftime show. But did you see Kung Fu Kenny straight wrecking the stage last night?
Yeah. Hey, I remember syrup sandwiches and crime allowances. Finessing on them with some counterfeits, but now I'm counting this. Parmesan with my accountant.
Now listen, I can't tell how bad. I would love to see all of you diving for your phones to thumb out some misguided scud right now that I am way out of my element. That I've swerved way out of my own lane. That's fine, haters. That's fine. You do you and all do me. Because when a kid from Compton gets the nod at a nationally televised halftime show that the entire world is watching, you best believe that a kid from the 818 is going to use his platform to give some well-deserved shine. Especially when he kills it, because I got loyalty inside this LA DNA. I tweeted it last night when the game was 13-0, Georgia at the half. I tweeted, quote, give Kendrick Lamar the national championship trophy and call off the second half, end quote. So Bama can thank me and K-Dot for waking them the hell up. Halftime shows are usually whack. They usually suck. Not this one. Something about that dude. Something about that dude, that size, draped in all black, dominating the stage by himself on a Monday night on a Disney-owned channel was pretty sick. And you know me, I'm not coming off that. Yes, I'm an alt-rock guy. Yes, I'm a old-school punk rock guy. I get down with Rise Against and Metallica. But that doesn't mean that I don't have respect for the best MC of this generation, especially when he's from here. Like I said, game, recognize game. SoCal, recognize SoCal. Kendrick, one word. Damn.
Yeah. Hey, I remember syrup sandwiches.
Damn. He was awesome. That was an awesome, awesome halftime show. This guy straight wrecked that joint. Let's go to the phones. We go to Sacramento. Ken up in NoCal. Ken, my man. Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year, Romy. Thanks for the vine. And don't you think it's appropriate that Kendrick Lamar, the hottest MC of this generation, is dealing at the time of the hottest coach in college football history? Nick Saban has just cemented his throne. This guy is the greatest college football coach ever, possibly the greatest coach, period, Romy. Because when I say that, you're talking about a guy who year in, year out, gets the utmost out of his talent. The reason why I say he's the greatest is you haven't seen a run like this probably since Wooden was at UCLA, where you have a coach, the top coach in the game, getting the top players in the game, and producing the top percentage, the top championships year in, year out. And if he's not in the if he's not winning the championship, he's right there competing for it. I mean, we think about greatness in terms of how often you can get yourself to the opportunity to play for a title. Saban is almost in his DNA. This happens every single year. I mean, we talk about, or I've made the statement before, that he and Calipari are very similar. But in order for Calipari to do what Saban is doing at Alabama, he would have to be in the Final Four every single year and playing in the championship game every single year, or at least every other year. This is absolutely amazing. And the other thing is, it's not like back in the day when Wooden could monopolize all the best players, or the best programs could monopolize all the best players and hoard them. He has to share the bite of the apple with everybody. And so, and even when you take a look at it, Alabama doesn't have the most players in the NFL. This coming season, LSU has had the most. In fact, if you take a look, LSU and USC has just as many NFL prospects or NFL players as Alabama. Yet year in, year out, Saban is winning.
So in other words, Ken, let me jump in because I want to agree with what you're saying, Ken. And the fact of the matter is, it's just not set up to win the way he's winning right now. Isn't that what you're saying? I mean, the fact is, that's six. That's six for him. Nick Saban won his sixth national title last night and his fifth in the last 9 years at Alabama. And let's get something clear. Only Nick Saban wins that game. And it's not because he's a wizard of a coach, even though he is. It's not because he's been there before, because he has, but because he's the only guy in the country who can bench a 25-2 starting quarterback and turn to a five-star freshman, and then a bunch of other five-star freshmen when the starters are not getting it done. See, that's not to slight him or the process. In fact, that's a tip of the cap to the process. Because as much as that process is about winning the moment and doing your job, it's also about recruiting, something Ken was just talking about. And Saban does that as well as anybody has ever done that. And then the end result, Saban with another title. And to me, that's the most predictable thing ever after they barely got into the playoffs. As I said back when the four teams were announced, the most Saban thing ever would be to sneak into the tournament and then win the whole damn thing, which is what they did. And for much of last night, they didn't even deserve it. That was the most un-Alabama performance that I've seen in a really long time. Undisciplined, getting caught with more than 11 men on the field, roughing the passer, mental errors made by a team that never makes mental errors. And that's before we even get to Mekhi Brown punching a Georgia player, getting flagged, and then getting into it with staffers on the Alabama sideline. You see that, but you don't see that from Alabama. They were not playing Alabama football. They were unraveling in shocking ways, completely melting down and getting worked by a true freshman in Jake Fromm. I mean, they look gassed on defense. They look like they'd run into a better version of themselves, because really they had. But then Tua shows up, and Tua saves everything and changed everything. Tua came in and played the way he did, and that makes Saban look like a genius. Listen, if this kid comes in and he tosses a couple of picks or he fumbles a few snaps, we're not talking about Saban as a genius right now. We're talking about how Saban panicked and went away from a starter when they were only down two scores at halftime. Except Tua didn't do that. Tua made that decision look brilliant. And I know some of you recruiting honks will want to come in here and say, yeah, well, you saw that coming when he stepped on the field. Man, stop that. No, you didn't. Nobody did. Maybe not even Saban. Nobody saw a true freshman dragging an entire team out of the funk of the first half and putting them in position to win that game in regulation before a brutal miss from their kicker from 36 yards out. That was tough. I mean, really, really tough, because that kick never had a chance. That kick wasn't even close. I mean, that kick, what was that? That was pressure. It was pressure. But I get it. I mean, I was nervous, and I was 3,000 miles away, and I'm not kicking. I can only imagine the pressure that a young kicker was feeling on the field. And then you've got Saban's horrendous history with kicking, and that continues, and nearly cost them that game. But Tua rises up, and he saves them in overtime. Can you imagine how furious Saban would have been if he lost to a former assistant on a missed kick like that? Extremely. Because of Tua, though, that didn't happen. And because of Tua, now everybody wants to talk about Saban's championships and his legacy. Yeah, either that or people want to talk about how sick of Alabama they are. Which brings me to my last point. Alabama fatigue. I get it. It's real. People are sick of Alabama. They're sick of seeing them there every single year. They're sick of them winning almost every single year. And most of all, they're sick of them winning the way they win. Except Tua changes all of that. He changed everything. I mean, I don't care how bitter you are about Nick Saban and his bitterness, or how much you think that Nick Saban cheats. If watching Tua do what he did last night does not make you shake your head in amazement, then that's a you problem. Then you probably should just stop watching college football altogether. If seeing a freshman come onto the biggest stage and play with absolutely no fear and just throw lasers all over the place doesn't make you at least smile, then you're a major troll. Because that made Nick Saban smile, and that dude never smiles. This is the same guy who complains about winning a national championship because it cuts into his recruiting time. The same guy who last night was practically giddy when he said, I have never been happier in my life. Never.
You know, right now, I'm just happy for all these folks here. I'm happy for all these folks. I'm happy for our players. I don't care anything about that, to be honest with you. This was a great win for our players, and I've never been happier in my life. Never. Never.
That's ESPN. I thought that old guy was going to cry. I thought he was choking up. I thought he was going to crack. That was the most amazing thing about Tua last night, that he got Saban to let down the Saban act for 1 minute and just be a person. Hell, a happy person at that. So the bad news for everybody else in college football and everybody who's sick of Nick Saban and sick of Alabama is that Saban and Alabama aren't tired. You might have Alabama fatigue, but Alabama doesn't have any fatigue. By all accounts, this guy's as motivated and driven as he has ever been. And from the looks of that second half, he finally has something he's never had before, a star quarterback. Saban probably enjoyed that win for all of 5 minutes before he started to plan for next season, which means the winning will not stop and the fatigue will not end. There is a lot more where that came from. That's a problem for all the haters. So if you hate Alabama and you're sick of Alabama and you've got Alabama fatigue, just know they ain't tired. They're not fatigued. It's going to be a lot more of that. All right, we head into hour number three, 1-800-636-8686. We are wide open. What do you want to hit? What do you want to talk about? I've got lots of time for your telephone calls, and we will pick them up next hour. Also, a look ahead, Podcast Tuesday is back. We have an original podcast. Maybe you haven't heard this show in a long time. Maybe you don't even know we have a podcast. We have an original podcast, which I'm really proud of, and I will tell you all about that. When we return, you're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. This is CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network.